Hello and welcome to episode 3 of series 4 of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. This is the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with all that is new in our profession. My name's Craig Smith from The Big Picture People. Thank you very much for listening into today's episode. If this is the first time you've listened to the show, then we have 90 episodes preceding this back on our website and also on iTunes and whatever platform you're listening to this on. You'll be able to find our previous episodes there. And obviously, we're in the final, well, not the final, we're in the run up to now to our 100th episode, which we're looking forward to be celebrating. Not decided what we're going to do for that, whether we'll get any special guests together or whether maybe do a recap of what we've covered in the first 100 episodes. I don't think we'll be covering every piece of detail in them, but we'll try and do something special for the 100th episode later on in the year. Coming up in the next episode, I've got an interview with Amy Wong from Always On Purpose, and we're going to be looking about the importance of trust in organizational communications and in organizations in general. And then the episode after that on the 28th of February is with Shelby Scarborough, and Shelby's going to be telling us all about the importance of civility and politeness in organizational communications. Shelby's got an amazing backstory. She's worked in a number of different roles. She's worked with President Reagan back in the day with summits with Gorbachev. For those of you who are old enough to remember that, really key pivotal moments, really interesting career in both spanning politics, but now also into organizational communications, and really some amazing stories there that Shelby is going to be sharing with us on that episode. So looking forward to that episode going out. We are looking for guests for later in the year. So if you or any of your network or colleagues might be interested in being a guest on the show, then let me know. Drop us a note. If you go to engagingic.com, the page for the podcast, you'll see there's a sign up form there or a comms form where you can drop us a message, either that or drop us an email at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk. If you're interested in being a guest, I'd encourage you to do so. Even if you've not been on a podcast before, or you're not necessarily someone who is sure whether your podcasting guesting is your thing, give it a go. We've had some amazing people who've come forward in our previous episodes. Our guests are often a mix of people who've approached me and people I've approached. So if you're interested, let me know, and always happy to speak to new people. If you've got something interesting that you've been working on, or you've got a particular angle on internal comms or employee engagement, then always interested to hear about that. So drop us a note, and we can arrange a preliminary conversation to decide whether it's right for you and if you're right for the show. So happy to do that. So that's it, really. I'm not gonna talk about anything else. I'm gonna get straight on to this episode's interview. We're probably all familiar with the disengagement and engagement data that we see regularly on posts within LinkedIn and other places that tell us that a vast majority of our employees in any part of the world, in many parts of the world, are disengaged. Some as high as 85% of employees, in some cases, in some surveys, are reporting to be disengaged. A key part of that is the inclusivity and sense of belonging that we have in our workplaces. It's often the case that our workplaces have evolved over time, and there's not really been a lot of conscious thought gone into them. And that includes all sorts of things. It includes the actual physical workplace. It includes the working environment, the style of leadership, the way that we communicate. Many different things go into making up what is the workplace that we label it as. One of the key things, other key things that we need to be thinking about, though, is also how we help different generations integrate into that workplace. Regardless of what age you are, what generation you are, it's likely that you recognize that different generations have different expectations. And again, without generalizing too much, different ways of seeing the world, different preferences for the way they communicate and are communicated to, but also their requirements from their work as well. So it's important that we recognise that. It's important that we look to develop a workplace that is as inclusive as we can make it, you know, we can adapt it to as much as possible to people's needs, and that recognises these generational needs. So what we're going to be doing in this episode is looking at what are those different generations that exist. So we're probably familiar with terms like Gen X, Millennials, Gen Z, Baby Boomers. We're going to be looking at what those different generations are who are all still active in the workplace, and then look at how we can help to cultivate a culture that is inclusive and reflects the different needs of those generations. We're going to look at how we can bridge some of the gaps that might exist between in-person and virtual working, which is obviously a recent phenomenon that we've seen more growth of. And also we're going to explore the idea that having a best friend at work is a really important component of your productivity and something that we should be thinking about trying to consciously create within our workplaces to help people feel more involved, engaged, and included. So that's what we're going to be looking at today, how we can create a conscious workplace, and particularly in the context of multi-generational working. So I hope you find this a useful conversation. My guest today is Shara Roman. Shara is the founder and CEO of the Silverine Group, which is a culture consulting firm which aligns people, strategy, and culture to optimize organizational performance. As an award-winning entrepreneur, board member, speaker, and author, and experienced chief human resources officer, Shara and her team consult with leaders to create healthy workplaces by helping them to build inclusive and workplace cultures, design effective organizations, and align their company values and people programs to achieve business results. So prior to founding the Silverine Group in 2016, Shara held leadership positions for Fortune 500 companies, which included Fannie Mae, Visa, as well as CGI and NRECA. Shara was born in India, schooled in Nigeria and England, and then left to live in Greece before coming to the United States. In her new book, The Conscious Workplace, Fortify Your Culture to Thrive in Any Crisis, Shara presents a perspective on the importance of workplace culture and how it leads to profitable business. That was a long introduction, Shara. So how are you and where are you, please, in the world at the moment?
Craig, hi. I am doing really well. Thank you so much for having me on today. I am based in Arlington, Virginia, which is right outside the Washington, D.C. area.
Yeah, fantastic. And so we've got a time difference there. It's morning your time, afternoon mine.
It is morning, yes.
What's the weather doing? I'm a British, I always ask about the weather. What's the worst of weather like in Arlington at the moment?
Well, it's pretty nice. It's cold, but good. It's crisp and fall. And it's pretty nice. Much better than the weather we had a couple of days ago where it was pouring rain and definitely made me think about my time in England. So,
well, I can tell you that has made its way across here because we have not had a dry second today. It's just been continual rain. So I've battened down the hatches and closed the blinds. So hopefully you can't hear it rattling off the windows in the background. So anyway, I gave a long introduction there. I guess in your own words, tell us a little bit about what you're passionate about, what you're doing at the moment, and how that reflects the career that you've had so far, which is really, really diverse, both in terms of what you've done and where you've been as well. You're certainly a globetrotter.
Yes, it's interesting, and thank you for that introduction. And it's always interesting to hear someone read, you know, sort of your bio, and it makes you go, okay, that's really, really long. So I need to crisp that up. So thank you for indulging me and doing all of that. But as you said, you know, I was born and lived in different places, and I think what that meant for me is that I essentially spent the first sort of 20 something years of my life, well, and even now, right, being a guest in someone else's country. And, you know, all through my life, and particularly as a child and a young adult, I had to figure out how I could belong where I was, you know, how could I sort of fit in, but then also, sort of match my family values where I was brought up with this, this very strong sense of be who you are, you know, be yourself, be authentic, know what you stand for, and don't compromise that. Yet, of course, we all want to belong, right? And so I had to sort of straddle that fence of finding myself, being who I was, and then making sure that I could feel really connected and have a friends and, you know, feel that I could really be welcomed and be who I was. And, you know, coming really to the U.S., I was a young woman. I was an immigrant woman, right? I was married to, I am still married to a Puerto Rican who grew up in New York and was in the Marine Corps. And I wasn't always welcomed in the workplace here. And more so just because of who I was and how I sort of showed up in the world, but or how I showed up in the work world.
Yeah.
But what sort of really, you know, got me to sort of where I am today with founding the business back in 2016 and then writing the book over the last couple of years is that, and you talk a lot about this, Craig, on your podcast, is that we've, you know, just seen an ongoing trend of employees, of workers being disengaged. And there are these, you know, huge trends of just people, you know, checking out, whether it's the quiet quitting or the great resignation, right? Women leaving the workforce in droves. And it just really, really bothers me that we spend so much time at work and we are not creating workplaces where people can thrive. And on top of that, we have these huge demographic shifts, right, that are happening out there. We've got, well, the millennials arrived 40 years ago, and there's 70, 80 million of them, and they've really changed and challenged the workplace. And then as a mom of Gen Z kids, right, I have a 19 and an almost 17-year-old, we've raised our kids to think critically, to be resourceful, to ask questions, to challenge assumptions. But our workplaces are so stifling. They don't allow people to sort of really bring those elements into the workplace. And I'm not talking about all workplaces. I'm talking about it sort of in generalities, right?
Which
sort of leads to this sort of 85% plus being disengaged. So I'm passionate about wanting to really help leaders have that light bulb moment where they can really understand what is happening externally in terms of the talent market and how they can shift how they build their, how they build and curate and sort of foster the kind of culture and environment so that we can shift out of being in the 1950s and 60s, which and sort of really come into a much more modern day workplace.
Yeah. And I guess hence the conscious workplace, something that's been thought through and planned rather than just happen chance, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure. It, you know, I say this and I know people have said it as well, is you're always going to have a culture, right? Mm. And it's really up to you to decide, are you going to let your culture be what it is, or are you going to really be intentional and deliberate and design a culture very consciously and very purposefully, and really sort of think about what that means for you and your employees, the talent that you have, and essentially the clients and the customers that you serve.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So you mentioned there about generational issues or generational gaps and how we, you know, that how that factors into the into this this idea of the conscious workplace and what people want. Just before we dive into that, because I think that's a really important part of what we're going to be talking about today, just for our listeners, and I'm always terrible at this, at remembering which are millennials, which are Gen Z, which are X. So I don't know whether you've got that to hand or whether you recall it, but just so we can understand those sort of different ages and eras and epochs of employees and what sort of, when we're talking about these different generations, what are we talking about?
Yes, that's a great question. And I know for some of us who spend our time in this space, it's a little easier for us to remember, but even so, I do write it down. So I'll just start with sort of with baby boomers, who are those folks, probably our parents, Craig, right?
Yeah.
That were born sort of between 1946 and 1964.
Yeah.
So they are still in the workforce, right? I mean, certainly you have people older than them that are in the workforce, but that's sort of the pinnacle generation. And for the most part, the generation that has really sort of set the stage for the workforce, the type of workforce that we live in. The Gen Xers are who I'm a part of that generation, were born between 1965 and 1980.
Yeah, that's me.
yes. And then millennials, also known as Gen Y and what else? They have many different names, but they're most commonly known as millennials, are born between 1981 and 1995. And I should just go back for a second. The baby boomers is a very big generation, right? It's about 18 years or so of people. And there was a lot. It's post-war. So there were a lot of kids that were born during that time. And big generation. Gen X is a small generation, right? Mm. And so we're kind of squeezed between the baby boomers and the millennials, which is also another big generation, as I mentioned, sort of 70, 80 million of them. And then the Gen Zs, which are basically those born between 1996 and 2010. So the oldest of the Gen Zs is 26 years old.
Right.
And the oldest of the millennials are in their, you know, late 40s, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The millennials are not sort of young pups or sort of or early 40s. They're not sort of these young pups that are sort of coming into the workforce.
Yeah. They're
here, right? They're here. They've been here. They're leading, et cetera. And then we've, and I'm certainly not steeped in the generation alpha, but that's the new generation, right? The youngest generation that are, born 2010 to present. So they're in their, the oldest of them are in their tween years. And we need to be paying attention to them because, the world is moving so rapidly that they're going to start to shift how we show up. So
That's really interesting.
To that question.
No, a good answer though. I think it's always worth, because I alluded to there, whenever I think of millennials, I still think of, and you're right. I mean, some of the youngest of those are still mid-20s, but, some of them are, not too far away from me. So age-wise, so it's not as all as young and hip as we sometimes sort of have that mental picture when we think of millennials. So that's great context. What's the relevance of that, I guess, then? So in terms of all we've been talking about and this kind of idea of the conscious workplace and how we help these people belong, we've got a very diverse, there's all forms of diversity that we need to be mindful of and respectful of, but also this is another facet to that, I guess, that often gets overlooked, or perhaps gets overlooked. So I'm just interested to know how those different generations view the workplace, and then obviously we're going to make some generalizations there, but also what they expect and what that what implications that has for the way we lead and communicate with them as well.
Yeah, really great question, Craig. And, I'll start with sort of Gen Z, because I think that's sort of where we need to really start to reframe how we think about the workplace and how we think about how we lead. So when you look at the Gen Z, they are the most racially and ethnically diverse group.
Right.
They are digital natives. I often sort of joke that they were born with a smartphone or an iPad in their hand, right? Hopefully the smartphone and not the iPad. But, they're digital natives. They're even more educated, believe it or not, than the millennials, who were the most educated generation. Mm. And the Gen Zs are most likely to have college-educated parents, different from slightly different from the millennials. They are very real. They're very authentic, right? They have access to information at their fingertips. Google is their best friend. Mm. And so that has sort of created a generation of folks that can go find the answer. They don't have to come to their mom or dad for the answer. They don't have to go to their teachers. They crowdsource answers. They go to Google or whatever search engine they're using, right? And they get what they need. Mm. Both millennials and Gen Zs, I don't mean to sort of have a whole sort of political conversation, so we won't go there, but it is important to understand that millennials and Gen Zs are progressive. Mm. They are pro-government. And they see, particularly in the United States, that the racial and ethnic diversity as a good thing.
Mm.
So they have sort of a different view, right, from that perspective. Millennials, millennials and Gen Zs are a bit different, but again, they do have these some commonalities. They did bring changes into the workplace, right? Mm. They brought this need for flexibility. They brought the technology sort of savvy They brought a much more collaborative and creative spin to the workplace. Not to say that people weren't collaborative or creative before, but that was just how they worked. It was how they were groomed in school. And both millennials and Gen Zs, but particularly Gen Zs, you know, back in the day when, certainly when I was in the workforce, Craig, and I'm sure when you were there and our parents were in the workforce, there was this adage of, you know, your boss would say jump and you'd say how high.
Yeah.
And I was sort of one, I don't really do well with authority, right? Much to my parents' chagrin, but, and I would sort of try to challenge it or want to challenge it, but I may not have always leaned into challenging it. But now if you say jump, you're going to get a look from your Gen Z employee and they're going to say, why do you want me to jump? And what is my jump going to help achieve, right? And they're going to really challenge that, not because they're just, they're being obnoxious. It's because they really want to understand what is this going to serve, right?
Yeah.
And so in this conscious workplace, you have to be real and authentic. And, when I think about, sorry, let me just go back to the real piece. And we may have talked about this before. Gen Z has an app that is, called Be Real, and it's the anti-Instagram, right? And this is one where they are constantly snapping photos of themselves in the moment of how they look. So they're not, you know, arranging the food beautifully or kind of, primping themselves before they take the photos.
They're
just doing it because it's sort of intended to be, I want to show you how I am right now. And they're pushing back, right? They're pushing back against photoshopping. They're pushing back against sort of all this sort of fakeness that's out there. And we know this as, company leaders when we're marketing to them and we're looking to them as consumers, because we also know that they have a lot of spending power, right? Mm-hmm. They as younger Gen Zs, they have a lot of influence over their parents. And as Gen Zs that are now earning their own money, they're choosing, right, how to spend and what to buy and all of that. And so we know and we're interested and we care about their buying needs, their marketing habits, their consumer habits, their spending habits. And we use all of that information to curate their feed on social media, right? To curate specific things. But we aren't translating that and taking that into the workplace. And that's partly what I want people to take from reading The Conscious Workplace, is to really understand that you've got to now curate the feed for the employee in your workplace. And so, as you curate that feed, you've got to understand that your baby boomers feed is going to look different than your Gen X, than your Gen Z, than your millennial, right? And so when you're curating this workplace, it's not a one size fits all. It's going to be one that is much more customized. But you know what I would advise leaders as they are kind of trying to figure out sort of what are some of the strategies that they embrace. First of all, they really need to be authentic, right? And they need to figure out how to take these strategies or take this sort of these recommendations and figure out how it's going to work for them and how they're going to lean into it. But, you know, the first thing is to be really transparent in communications. And I know that's the audience that you, one of the audiences that you sort of, that you have. And so I'm probably preaching to the choir here. but being really transparent is important. And it doesn't mean, you know, throwing everything out there and sort of causing alarm necessarily, right? But you do have to be honest and straightforward and deliberate about what you're sharing. Because if you try to pull the wool over their eyes, they will know. What they do have today that we didn't have, you know, 20 years ago or 30 years ago is they can research, you know, on the internet, right? Everything that's happening in your organization. They share chats, they share emails, they snap they snap screenshots or they take screenshots of text chains that are happening. So all of the information, all of the stuff that's going on behind closed doors is really not going on behind closed doors. So it's out there. So you just have to understand that, embrace it, and figure out how are you going to tell the story of what is going on in your company in a way that is authentic, in a way that certainly if you're a public company that sort of, you know, manages all the protocols that you have to from that perspective, but you've got to find that line, right?
Yeah. To go back to something you said there. No, you talked about curating the workplace. And obviously that I'm guessing that does feed into a certain extent around kind of communications as well. But could you just say a little bit more about that? Because I'm really intrigued about that. And I think that's probably something that maybe, what we mean when we talk about curate the workplace, I can probably guess, but it's just, it'd be useful to just to kind of drill into that a little bit more.
Sure. I think it's really about creating a work environment and a work experience that works for your for your workforce. So it is understanding who your workforce is. So you do need to use data to understand what does your demographic makeup look like, what's important to them, what are the things that they want and they need so that they can thrive in the workplace. And certainly communications is one of them, right? But it could be around career development. Well, it's not going to be a one-size-fits-all around career development, right? We're going to need to really think about individually, what do people need? And so you're going to have to be creative about, there might be some fundamental development types of things that you're doing in your organization, but it's not going to be, here are the three programs we offer, and you kind of you've got to take them, right?
Yeah. Okay.
It's sort of really about thinking about what are the needs and how do I sort of create the space? How do I create a leadership? So the other piece I was going to talk about is, what does my leadership need to look like, right? How do I lead with more empathy and compassion? Because when you lead with more empathy, which millennials are very good at and do much more naturally as leaders, right? As they're coming into these roles and are in these roles, when you're leading with more empathy, you are going to individually create you'll create a more curated workplace, right? Because you're really sort of thinking about the individual and their needs. Now, you do have to balance that with not having the kind of workforce or workplace, rather, where you're playing favorites, right? So it's understanding you want to be equitable, you want to ensure that everyone has opportunities, but you've got to really understand the people that you have working for you as people versus just teams or groups or hundreds and not really thinking about the individual.
Okay. Excellent. Okay. And I don't know whether my question actually covered that, but the idea that how we cover off those different needs, making sure the workplace is inclusive and reflective, that's what we've just talked about. Are there any other things that you'd recommend from an internal comms perspective or just from a general perspective in terms of helping, to kind of cultivate that inclusive culture, particularly when we're looking at generational differences?
Yeah, I think that being curious and having an open mind is really important in creating an inclusive environment, because you do, as I mentioned, it's not a one size fits all, right? And you don't want to be sort of stereotypical. So you need to come in understanding that you don't have all the answers. It's not about debate, which I think is something that we used to very much revere, right, in the past, like who's the best debater, who's going to win. And it's not about winning, or one person winning, it's about everybody winning, right? And I don't mean about give everyone the medal, but it is really about creating a place where everybody can thrive, where everybody can win, quote unquote. So if you're curious and you lead with that curiosity, you lead with the open mind, you lead with questions and you foster dialogue and not debate, that's a really great way to create that inclusive and conscious workplace where you create a safe place to learn and to grow. I mentioned sort of the authenticity, right? And Gen Zs certainly want that, but they also want to see vulnerability, because vulnerability goes with that authenticity. So a leader, and Gen Zs and millennials, right? But a leader sharing their stories about how they've learned, how they've grown, how they've made mistakes, that's important to humanizing them. You know, just a personal story from myself, just to sort of role model. probably about 10 or 15 years ago, I had taken over as, or I'd been hired as the leader for this sort of group of about 25 people in HR. And I had a lot of young women working for me. You know, they had just become wives and mothers. They, you know, they were sort of finding their way sort of in this sort of new kind of intersectionality, right, of wife, mom, professional, et cetera. And I came in to the workforce or I came into the, to this job as their boss and always in their mind looked super put together, really professional, like everything was perfect. And one woman sort of said to me, she's like, how do you do it? You're so perfect. You have everything together. And I want to be sort of like you. And I sort of looked at her and I was like, okay, well, first of all, you don't want to be like me and you need to be you, right? And you need to find sort of what's going to really motivate and drive you. But I said, well, tell me why you say that. And she says, well, you always come in here and you look so great and your hair is great and your clothes are wonderful. And, you know, you have this like this perfect life. And I'm like, I don't have a perfect life. You should see me in the morning scurrying to get the heck out of here, right? And the heck out of my home to get to work. And I'm always running late and I have help at home. I have an au pair who lives with us and she helps with the kids. And, you know, and I sort of went into this whole piece around, what you're seeing is not actually what you're getting. And it made me sort of realize that by actually following kind of the old rules, right, of sort of putting on the suit and putting on a shell and a cover to show up, I was sort of creating this false expectation that to be a leader, you had to be perfect. You had to be perfectly groomed, perfectly, you know, perfectly perfect in everything. Yeah. And that moment made me realize, no, you have to sort of show kind of your mess ups, right?
Yeah.
And it's okay. It's actually going to help them connect. And that was like the most enlightening conversation for me. It was amazing for her. And it sort of really changed the trajectory of how I sort of showed up, right? And how I continue to be open to learn. And that's just a little story of you know, being curious, being vulnerable. And then that allows you to create those safe places for others to learn and grow.
Yeah.
And so when we talk about sort of inclusion and sort of really kind of making sure that there's space for all generations, it's really leading into that curiosity, right? And leading into the place of you as the leader don't have all the answers, which is hard because that's what we've been taught for the last God only knows how many years.
Absolutely. No, I love that. And I agree with you. I think it's very, you know, it's really weird because I mean, I love LinkedIn, but every time I go on there, it just seems to be, everybody's posts just seems to be proclaiming almost trying to make you feel inadequate with all the great things they've done and all the wonderful things they've done and the virtuousnesses of themselves. And you kind of think, you know, it just makes you feel as though, what am I doing wrong? how have I not got the time to do all these amazing things? Because for want of, you know, trying to sort of lead a good life, sometimes you just feel as though, you know, just the world's overtaken you. So yeah, I agree with you. I think actually I'd rather read about people who've messed up and you know, and actually you know, it's painful to read sometimes, but a lot of you know, on social media, not publicly but amongst friends, you know, I hear people talking about how they're struggling with things, and I'd much rather, I have much more respect for people who kind of talk about that than just, you know, because I'm old enough and wise enough now, you know, as a Gen Xer, to know that it isn't all perfect. And even behind the veneer, I've worked with very senior people who, you know, who people look up to and think, wow, you know, they're amazing. And actually, when you get to sort of, when the defense is down and you get to really talk to them, you just realize they're just as human as we all are, which is obvious. So, yeah,
exactly.
It's really important. I want to just talk about a couple of things. I'm conscious of time, and we were going to talk a little bit about in person and virtual, which is obviously a big thing at the moment, and you know, and I guess could be a generational you know, kind of a point of division, which is, you know, there's some, and again, this is something I've been reading a lot of kind of post-warfare on LinkedIn with, you know, kind of people proclaiming that the, you know, the workplace is dead, and then people diving in and saying, you know, actually it's not, because you know, and you kind of sense there's a generational thing going on there, and but also other things at play. What's your take on that, and particularly in terms of this conscious workplace? Because it seems that we've, you know, if anything's kind of evolved over the last couple of years that nobody really designed, it just grew out of nothing, was this whole, you know, kind of virtual hybrid world that we're in now. What are your thoughts on that, Shara?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I'll sort of straddle that fence, right? Very, very sort of put politically. No, I'm kidding. But I think it's a, well, I think it's both in the sense that the workplace as we knew it is definitely dead. Mm. So, and we've defaulted into, we're just going to take what we did in the workplace and we're going to shift it home, and we're going to just work that way. And then we'll create, you know, whether it's a Zoom thing or whatever, to sort of get people together, which is great. And it got us through the last couple of years. But in terms of being conscious, we do need to be very intentional and sort of design, what is our workplace culture? What is the kind of work experience? Again, you know, what is that experience we want to curate for people? Because the danger with hybrid is that if it's not managed properly and it's not thought about in a very intentional way, it's actually going to create a much more inequitable system, and it'll perpetuate this system of haves and have-nots. Because when you've got people, and we saw this before, right, when we'd have, you know, a headquarters in a particular city and then a handful or you know, a couple of handfuls of people strewn around in, you know, remote offices or sort of, you know, ancillary offices or working from home, where they were never really kind of in the room where it happened, right? To quote Hamilton here. So you have to be much more deliberate about how are you going to treat the people who are potentially coming into the office more frequently that may benefit from proximity bias. And how are you going to ensure that the folks that are coming in less frequently still have that connection and that experience that you want them to have? I think that so for example, you know, if you've got a tendency, as many of us do, that there's a bunch of people in a conference room and you have a meeting and then there's a couple of people, you know, zooming in, and the Zoom call ends and then people linger in the conference room and chit chat and talk more about the meeting, then you have just left out those two people, right? Or five people or whatever it is. So you really need to think about, how am I going to manage this time that we're together so that everybody is part of the conversation? And so by actually having this sort of coming in a couple of days, whatever, and people sort of coming and going, that flexibility is also something we have to figure out. But I think people will be better off thinking about, what are the experiences that we really want to focus on where we can take the money that we're saving in our real estate costs and repurpose it into experiential types of things. So whether it's once a month or once a quarter, where everybody is coming into the office, right? And that deliberate time together is spent connecting, building relationships, collaborating, you know, getting to know each other on a much more personal level, and doing some work, but really making sure that human connection is happening. And then, you know, if you are having people come in on different days, maybe it's not perpetuating some people in a different location and others in a different location, right?
Yeah.
So we just have to think, there's no kind of magic bullet. There's no one size fits all. I think that you have to really think about, what is the work that you do? What is the purpose of people coming into the office? What do you want to get out of it? And how do you make sure that you're creating that equitable experience and you're not perpetuating, you know, people feeling like they're being left out, right? Because that's going to be the opposite of inclusion.
Absolutely, absolutely. I want to talk about leadership tools, to think about how we can do that and some practical stuff. Just before we do that, really briefly, if we could just maybe cover off this idea of the work best friend being really important. I remember years ago, this is going back to my organizational development days before I had my own business. I remember the Gallup survey. I think it was Gallup or one of the surveys we always talked mm-hmm. about. You know, I've got a best friend at work, sort of thing. Is it that, or is it something different to that? And what is that? Why is that a critical component of what we've been talking about? So this conscious workplace.
So Gallup did come up with this best friend idea. They have a whole book called Vital Friends, right? The bottom line around a best friend component or best friend sort of being a critical part of productivity and engagement at work is that we spend a lot of time at work. Having someone that you can confide in, that has your back, that you can vent to when you're mad at your boss or had a run-in with your client, you know, a shoulder to lean on, is a really important element of belonging. I don't know that Gallup sort of used those words and that phraseology back, 15, 20 years ago, but that's essentially what it's about, right? Mm-hmm. It's important to morale. It's important for your stress level. Because think about when you have, a good cry, right? Mm-hmm. Or you call a friend and you have a drink or go for a run or do whatever you do with your friend and you sort of just are able to share and have their support and have their connection. It is really, really important. And coming into a workplace, particularly if you're from a marginalized group, right, and you don't have that connection and you don't feel like you can be your whole self and you don't have someone who has your back and someone that you can connect with and bond with, that is going to create you having a more of a veneer, right, to use a word that you used before. And you'll sort of always be covering and always be a little bit on edge because you can't just fully let go. And so that's why it's important. And it's something that, again, we need to be much more intentional about if we're not going to all be in the office. So we don't have this opportunity to, bump into each other or just spontaneously make friends. We have to think more intentionally about how, as an organization, do we create these opportunities for people to get to know each other, right? And how do we just plan for it and make it a part of the business day so that it's not left to, up to the employee to sort of do it, right? Because your extroverted folks might be more comfortable and folks that are more shy or more introverted may have a hard time, right? So was not a quick answer.
No, that's perfect. I think that gets across that criticality of that is, I think, is really important. I just want to finish off on leadership tools. And we kind of got this in our notes that we're working from. So creating purposeful workplace for yourself and your employees. So I seem to recall we were going to talk about some specific tools that exist or you may have available to sort of help with that.
Yeah, I think in terms of purpose, it's not really, it's just not enough. We talk a lot about purpose. Let me just take a step back, right? We talk a lot about purpose, but it's not just about purpose at the highest level. So as a leader, what you really want to think about is not just what the purpose is for the company and communicating sort of the why around what you do, but it is also ensuring that you and all the leaders in your organization are making time to understand what is your employees' inner purpose? What is their passion? What lights them up? Because the purpose of your organization may not work for them. It's one thing, organizations that serve senior citizens or produce, military weaponry or, defense stuff for military organizations. They're providing, they might be very purposeful for people who really feel passionate about working with senior citizens or who feel really passionate about supporting the military. But that doesn't mean that people don't think those are good things. It just may not be what lights them up, right? So really understanding what lights people up, what are their strengths, what are their passions, and how do you really connect the purpose of your organization to that? And how do you make sure that the people that you have are lit up by your purpose? Mm. That is going to be something that really helps you create an organization where people can thrive, right? Because they're coming in and they're connecting what they're passionate about to what the company is doing that then serves a greater good. Because it's not just good enough anymore to work for a company that's not doing harm, right? Mm. Or, you know, just doing good, but they really want to see sort of that connection. So that's sort of, I think, one big piece around really just ensuring you understand what the people that work for you are connected to and passionate about.
Yeah. Yeah. And I definitely agree with you. I think, and again, it's easy to stereotype, but I think definitely as we move into the sort of, you know, the Gen Z and the Gen Alpha that you talked about earlier, I know they're still to go into the workplace. There's definitely a sense of, you know, kind of having more responsibility, particularly when it comes to, you know, the planet and mm-hmm. and also, you know, society in general. And yeah, I mean, some people I know sort of a bit cynical about that sometimes, say, well, I can think back to when we were in our teens and 20s, we were quite idealistic, but I think it's different. I think it's very different now. The world is clearly needs a generation of responsible owners to look after it. And I think it's good that that's starting to feed into the workplace now. And in terms of, you know, you can't just pay people a load of money and get them to do anything. I think there's certainly the newer generations coming to the workplace have that expectation that they don't want to be doing any harm and they want to be doing good. If that needs to be really clear. So I think absolutely agree with you there that purpose needs to be crystal clear and front and center. So look, we've covered a lot there in a relatively short space of time. I just want to give you a chance just to maybe just to sort of sum up on what we said. And obviously we'll talk in a moment about the some links that we'll put into the show notes about if anyone wants to follow up with you and pick up on and obviously find the book as well. But before we do that, any final closing thoughts, thoughts, Shara, please?
Yeah, just a couple of things. One is I just want to build on what you said about sort of doing good for the world, right? Mm. Think about Patagonia's founder. Mm. And if you go to Patagonia's website, and I'm not sort of a paid, they're not like a paid sponsor.
No, it's fine. No. We've had them mentioned before. They're a great story. Yeah.
They're a great story, right? You go to their website and you sort of see they have a singular commitment to saving the planet. Right. Mm. Everything they do is centered around that. And so being and their founder, as we all know, has sort of, you know, committed to giving away all of his wealth to save the planet. Mm. So there is a perfect perfect example of a very public organization that is walking the talk around their culture. And that's what I would, sort of say as sort of one of the takeaways is, first of all, you know, be intentional with the design of your culture. Be really thoughtful about what you want it to be like, but then really be committed to walking the talk. Because if what you say isn't what you do, that is just not going to get you anywhere, right? Then you're better off actually not bothering with creating an intentional culture because you would have just wasted your time. I think second would be really coming into the workplace with a curious and open mindset and realize and recognize that what might have driven your success in the past is not going to drive your success in the future. And the third thing, and we didn't really talk about it in much detail, but we talked a little bit about sort of autonomy and sort of people really wanting to sort of drive their own, agenda. I would just say really think about how you can create that space for people to be who they truly are so that they can contribute to your organization and bring their full breadth of creativity and intellect and kind of all of their lived experiences to bear for you ultimately in your organization and your customers and clients and for each other as colleagues.
Excellent. Well, that's a fantastic way to finish the interview before we just finally talk about how people can get in touch with you, Shara. So what's a good way to reach out to you? I was going to put the your LinkedIn profile into the show notes so people can find you there and drop you a message if they want to connect with you. We've got the links for your website and for you, your personal website, and also for Silverine Group as well. And I think we're going to put the link into the book as well on Amazon. So if people wanted to just cut to the chase and one click, get to the book, buy it, they can do that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are all perfect. LinkedIn, follow me, sign up for our newsletter. It's a great way to stay connected. Check out the book website, follow our company, which is on LinkedIn as well, under Silverine Group. So yes, yeah. That's fantastic. You nailed it, Craig.
Yeah, we've got everything there. We did our pre-work well in advance. So
you
sent me all those links through. So thank you for that. Well, look, Shara, that's been absolutely fantastic speaking to you. I'm so glad we had this conversation. I really, really insightful and definitely an area, you know, I think, again, without being too stereotypical, I'm being honest here, you know, as a Gen Xer, I think it's very easy for us, as I said earlier, to get all of these different generational needs muddled up sometimes and assume everybody is just sort of, you know, Instagram friendly and you do everything via technology, but it's not as simple as that. It's more nuanced and it's not just about use of technology. It's so much more inclusive, and, you know, and to create that inclusivity, I think is really, really something that we need to do intentionally. And I think that's really come across strongly in the conversation that we've had. So I'm very grateful. Thank you, Shara, and look forward to speaking to you again maybe at some point in the future. And I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you, Craig. Would love to continue the conversation and really, really appreciate you having me on.
Fantastic. Thank you. Goodbye.
Perfect. Thanks. Bye.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. If you've got any ideas for episodes you'd like us to cover in future, you can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, or you can use the feedback form at engagingic.com. If you're not already subscribed to the show via your podcast platform, please do so. And if you could leave a review for us, that would be absolutely fantastic. We have links to other episodes at engagingic.com. All of our previous episodes are available there. And if you're interested in our visual communication services, our big pictures, our learning maps, our explainer videos, and also our live graphic recording, please get in touch with us again at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk. Thank you.